Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Last week, the Clark County School Board voted against the contract that would have demolished the Campbell Lane building on the West Broad School campus, which once served black students during the segregation era. The school district plans to turn the campus into a new early learning center using funds from a federal Head Start grant. But the exact details of that plan still remain in question. Of the three buildings on the campus, one is considered to be in too poor shape to be saved, and one is already slated to be preserved. The controversy revolves around the fate of the Campbell Street building, notable because it was built during the 1950s equalization era. At last week's meeting, Superintendent Zernona Thomas recommended the plan that would demolish the Campbell Lane building to build a structure with more classrooms in its place. But the vote narrowly failed in a 5-4 vote, meaning Thomas will have to return to the board with a new recommendation. Here to talk about that, plus the rest of the weekend news, are Chris Dowd with Athens Politics Nerd, Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, and Stephanie Allen with the Athens Banner-Herald. We've been watching this story for some time, and there's a lot of feelings on both sides of the issue. What are your thoughts about the turn of events?
I think it definitely has to do with the advocacy by, you know, leaders in the Black community like Fred Smith and Ken Dias. And, you know, they've been working with Historic Athens, who, of course, wants to save these buildings. So, community activism works. I believe they're really the ones who saved this building.
You know, there was one architect who was for saving the Campbell Lane building. And they need to talk to her again, I guess.
The former preservationist wanted to, you know, save the building, but the current preservationist, she also, you know, recommended saving the building to the school board. It's not a matter necessarily of if this school can be saved or how much it's going to cost, but more so that it doesn't fit the needs of the program that they're wanting to put in there. The school board has received the recommendation from two different preservationists that they've hired, but it's more so a matter of all these other things right now. What's interesting is they originally had a March deadline to get, you know, students in classrooms, because this early Head Start program is funded through a grant. The grant says they had to be in classrooms by March, but they were able to get an extension. So they now have a new deadline, so they have to move a bit quicker in order to get kids into classrooms in order to still receive this grant. So that's part of why some of the Board of Education members are wanting to move quickly with this project so they don't lose that.
Let's move on now to the ever-changing COVID numbers. We seem to be down from our peak earlier this month, but the numbers are still high, and hospitals are working basically at capacity in so many areas, particularly ICU beds. And the numbers have dropped dramatically also for UGA this past week compared to the previous week. But it's not like though we've dropped from our peak, we're still really high. What are your concerns about our numbers?
It's interesting you mentioned UGA's numbers dropping because they certainly did drop dramatically. But if you also look at the surveillance tests that they're doing on campus, participation there has also dropped. So they're not getting as many tests in, which I think is certainly a factor in that.
Yeah, I am hopeful that our numbers will start to come down because they have been on the downslope. And since the Delta variant, kind of gets out there and affects people really quickly, I think it has a quick ramp up and then also a quick drop off is what I'm hoping. That's what they've seen in other places. So, and I don't know about the effect of the football games. I think that will be significant, but hopefully they will start to drop off here. So we just have to cross our fingers and wear masks and get vaccinated and hope.
Let's move on to the Athens-Clarke County Commission. They had a work session this week, and I know there were several items that got your attention, Gwen, and do you want to start with the Classic Center? And
I think that was the bulk of their meeting, but it was an exciting meeting in many ways because the Classic Center put forth a proposal that had been worked on hard by staff. It wasn't just coming from them, that instead of just building a 300 parking deck, space parking deck, that they would build an 800 that would accommodate whatever came on that available land that still remains and that is proposed to be by some the judicial center. And it sounded very much like the rest of the commission recognized the practical aspects of combining all of the construction and all of the plans together for what was going to be on that site. And the value of keeping our courthouse downtown and it being accessible to the multimodal site for anyone that did not have transportation, and for it to being a connector to the river and having a lot of business frontage there so that it creates a whole nother section. And, you know, we've been trying to move to the river with good assets for a long time.
And it sounds like the new judicial center will be located on Hickory Street, although they haven't totally finalized that yet. But it just seems like it makes the most sense there because it's right next to the multimodal center. Yeah, so people will have an easy time to get to it, even if you don't have a car. And they'll be able to partner with the Classic Center on building this parking deck, which will save money. And it'll be beneficial because the judicial center will use the spaces mostly during the day, whereas the Classic Center can use them mostly at night. So that's what they're thinking, that that partnership just seems to make sense from what they're saying at the meeting.
Yeah, both of those projects, the arena and the judicial center, were reduced by SPLOST, by the CMS decision. So when we can combine them, we don't duplicate some of the costs related to infrastructure and management and concrete, et cetera.
I know we also want to touch on this disparity study before we kind of moved on to other business. What is a disparity study, Gwen?
And the disparity study is designed to analyze where you're spending your money and what's available in your community that allows a higher level of use within the community, not only small businesses, but minority businesses, gender equality. And so what it does is it tells you what you're spending and what's out there and how you can create a greater equality among those people who are receiving public monies and build your smaller businesses and your minority businesses.
Yeah, so it might be that the local government usually contracts with businesses owned by white males, for example. And there may be some, minority-owned businesses or businesses owned by women who are offering, an equal product or a superior product even. So they're just trying to see if there have been disparities in the past as far as local government spending its money. And if there is, then they'll be able to do something about it, which is really why they're doing the study in the first place, because they really recognize that the local government doesn't have as much power as the state or federal government, but they do have some power and definitely some buying power. So this is going to be a year-long process. They're going to have community meetings. They're going to do in-depth interviews with local business owners and some other stakeholders. And so it'll be pretty interesting to see what happens and to see what the results are and how we can go about rectifying some of these disparities if we find that they exist.
Another story that's going to keep on going is the downtown bathroom. public bathroom. And that was an interesting discussion because the cost is primarily in the infrastructure and the initial building, not in the Portland Loo is the one that has been looked at. But the commission, it really it keeps wanting other options or to understand better and to open up more of the public restrooms within buildings already existing. It was an interesting discussion. They've asked for more options.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about why they even really need more options. It sounds like this Portland Loo design is actually pretty good and it's really easy to clean. And I don't know, it just looks like a great choice. And I'm a little confused about why they're so concerned about the price tag. I know it's $314,000. That I guess that does seem like a lot, but I think if you build anything downtown, it's going to be expensive. So I'm not really sure why there's such a controversy about it.
At least two commissioners, I think, have come out to say that they don't support the current version that's been set in front of them with the high price tag. I think those commissioners Wright and Hamby during the work session, they said that they're not going to vote for this, at least as it currently stands.
Right. I don't understand why when we opened the College Park parking deck, we had a bathroom in there. Then it got eaten up in the new offices for the parking. And so I think it was maintenance. They estimate it's about $33,000 for the Portland Loo a year, but it would be much more if we had to provide extra security in public in a public building that was open when nobody was there, et cetera.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, right? There isn't really a better option that's going to be cheaper. And so if everyone does want a bathroom, which is like people do, because like, they got like over 600 and something responses to the survey they did, and it was overwhelmingly positive. So everyone wants this bathroom and there isn't really a cheaper option. So I guess I'm a little puzzled about why there is some resistance to this, because it seems great to me.
Right. And to a lot of people, Chris, you're not alone. A lot of people support that idea. Before we go, I wanted to also mention briefly the cancellation of AthFest, the AthFest Music and Arts Festival, unfortunately for the second year in a row. Thank you, COVID-19.
Well, I hope they didn't lose very much money, because I do agree with the cancellation. But and I think we have to fight for it to come back and subsidize in next year if necessary, because they designed this at a time when we need revenue. That's a great time to fill for the Athens calendar. And it's also a celebration of our talents and increases our image as a cultural center.
Yeah, it's a real shame. 2 years in a row, that's such a blow, but hopefully we'll be back next year. I agree with you, Gwen. It was the right decision to cancel it. It's just really sad.
Is it a fair comparison to say we had Twilight, the numbers were high? You know, what's the difference in having a large public gathering like that versus AthFest?
Well, the reality is that the Twilight permit was issued prior to our numbers skyrocketing. For instance, Porch Fest is October 10th, and that's happening at like 36 different locations, but all of them are outdoors, and it's designed to spread out people in such a way that there won't be a congested area of people. So it will go on.
Yeah, I'm actually fine with Porch Fest. Yeah, I agree. That doesn't feel dangerous to me, but it's just AthFest when everyone is, you know, crowded right there in front of the stage like that. That I would not want to be there for sure.
That's all the time for this week's panel, but we'll have more Athens News Matters after the break.